fights with passion and he inspires.
Are you ready for a war?
All right, welcome back to From A to Arbitration. And today we're going to do the second part of the Weir Report. And so a lot of comments on the first one. It was not good. I told you, it's not good. But that's where we're at. So the Weir Report Part 2. Now, Sunday, I will not be doing an episode. I told you I was going to have a very special guest. We talked today. It will be the next Sunday because of Easter, all right? And so I'll be with my family. He will be with his. I wasn't even thinking about that when I said I was going to have him on on Friday. So he will definitely be on next Sunday, but no episode Sunday, all right? So enjoy last night's and today's. And so just play those again Monday. But no episode Sunday, all right? And I apologize, but I will definitely be back the next Sunday and with a special guest. I'll also do Publication 552. He won't be on that long, but we'll do the Publication 552 the next Sunday, all right? Because I need to get that done because we got bigger and better things to do as far as getting rogue management out of their positions. So what did y'all think about the Weir Report Part 1? It was some concerning stuff, right? And so what'd y'all think about it? When you look at the heroes and the zeros of that, when you look at the studs and the duds, as you would say, who would you think would be the heroes or the studs as far as when all this shit was going down? And I mean some terrible shit was happening. Who would you consider to be the studs when all that was going down? How about President Rolando? Would y'all consider him to be a stud or a hero as far as that's concerned? Here's a guy who was probably trying to enjoy his retirement and got met, you know, with a baseball bat in the face that just all this shit was going down. And so he comes back, gets with Tolino and Yates, and they try to salvage this thing as well as Barner. Try to salvage this thing, you know, collective bargaining, one of the most important things they will do. And so I would think that you would have to say that President Rolando was a hero and a stud during that period of time. What about Paul Barner? Would y'all consider him to be a hero and a stud during that time? I would have to say yes. You would definitely have to say that. Here's a guy who took on his responsibilities as well as Renfro's responsibilities. And I've talked to a lot of people up there who said that he stepped up big time. I'm going to give credit where it's due. I always have. I told you, if you do good, I'm going to say that. And if you do good, bad, I'm going to say that as well. But everybody I've talked to about that period of time said that Barner stepped up big time and saved the day. So I'm going to give the man credit. You heard that his name a lot in these reports where he was trying to salvage what he could of this debacle. He was completely honest about how it affected him, about when Renfro said, hey, I left him everything, and he said, you didn't leave me anything. And when you read this report, Weir Report, when you get it on, it's on FromAToArbitration.com, and you read it, Renfro's rebuttal is in there. So all these findings where this investigator has found him guilty, he denies everything. And I'll talk about that in just a second. What about Eddie Davidson? You heard his name a lot in there. I mean, he would have to be considered a stud, a hero during that period of time. He had heard his name a lot. He was not ready for that, you know, to get phone calls at 1 a.m. from some lady saying, hey, I found this phone and some dude's passed out in the bushes. He was having to handle a lot right there. That's a lot of stress put on somebody when your president or the executive vice president at the time has lost his shit. And so I'd have to say you would have to put Eddie Davidson in that category of a hero or a stud. What about Yates? Here's a guy who's one of the smartest dudes we got up there with the numbers. Well, he's forced into action, right? When Rolando talks to him, calls him, he's having to come up with numbers. And So I would think that you would have to say him as well. How about Weir, the guy who did the investigation? I would say that you would have to put him in that category of hero or stud, as you would say. This is not a pretty report. And he came up with some very difficult findings. This stuff that he talks about, you know, you heard several times when he would say Renfro was saying something, he would just say, he's not telling the truth here. You heard that several times. Renfro would say this in his rebuttal, and Weir would say, he's not telling the truth. He's not being truthful. You heard that over and over again. That's difficult. You know, here's the president of this union, and you're having to put in your report, he's not being truthful with y'all. He's not telling the truth. So I would definitely say him. How about duds? How about the zeros? When you say heroes to zeros, the duds, I would have to say Rolando. He was a hero for stepping in. I'd have to say he was also a zero. He told nobody about what was going on with Renfro. He blindsided us with coming in on that Wednesday at the National Convention. They had the big banner up. He's not on it. Renfro is on it, running for president. A few of us knew that was happening, but it blindsided everybody. You know, oh, Renfro's going to be president. Rolando's stepping down. Nobody knew. They hid this from everybody. Would that have changed the vote? I have no idea. I don't deal with speculation. But they hid these issues from all the members. That has to be the lowest of the low to do that. You did not tell us. You were not forthcoming with us. You were not truthful with us about Renfro's issues. And so I would have to say of all the zeros, he would be at the top. Because you put somebody in place you knew for a fact wasn't ready. You knew for a fact had issues, major issues, not just with alcoholism, a womanizer. You heard many times, he said over a dozen issues of him womanizing with men's wives. And so you knew this, and nobody knew about it. Nobody told the members. So I'd have to say that Rolando is the biggest of the zeros for putting that on the members without telling us who he was and what he was about. Renfro, I'd have to say he was a zero, a dud, because to this day he's not been truthful. If you look at his rebuttal, he's still not truthful, still in defiance. I know people talk about the alcoholism. We defend that. I have defended numerous people that are afflicted with the disease of alcoholism and arbitration or drug abuse. That's what we do. We defend them vigorously. And I had the episode about alcoholism and how to defend that. I told you the story about the rattlesnake. That was an actual thing I said in arbitration, where a gentleman showed up to the hearing high. He was on meth. And he was sweating unlike anything I've ever seen before. And I remember Buttrey was TAing for me, and he pokes me on the side, and I hate being bothered in arbitration. But he nudges me on the side, and I look over at him, and he points at the guy. Well, the guy's got a knife out. He's just whittling his fingernails in the middle of the hearing, high as hell. I mean, he is sweating like you wouldn't believe. He's had a gray shirt on. It was black from all the sweat. It just pouring off of his head. And he was high on meth. Everybody in there knew it. The arbitrator knew it. The advocate knew it. They talked about it. And I just leaned back in my closing. I said, do you see that, Mr. Arbitrator? And this guy's still looking down. He has no idea I'm talking about him. I said, do you see that, Mr. Arbitrator? That's a rattlesnake. And I remember Arbitrator Roberts was the one who was doing it. And he sat back in his chair and just crossed his arms and was kind of grinning because he knew where I was going. I said, that's a rattlesnake, you know, and I had the story about raising the rattlesnake and feeding the rattlesnake and caring for the rattlesnake and loving the rattlesnake. And you go down, you're going like, I'm going to pet him. I'm going to pet my pet rattlesnake. And you reach down there and it bites you and it kills you. You know why? Because it's a rattlesnake. That's what it does. That's who it is. And I pointed at the guy and I said, that guy right there is a rattlesnake. He's doing exactly what he is. He's an addict. And he's doing what addicts do, because why? He's had no help. And that's what we deal with all the time. So it's not about the alcoholism. Arbitrators always talk about post-removal conduct. What's the post-removal conduct? If you're removed for alcoholism, what have you done post-removal? And they will take that into consideration as a big help to us. That's the reason we always say, if you're going to AA, produce that. Give me those documents. If you're going to psychiatrist, give me that so I can show it to the arbitrator. Here is post-removal conduct. How is it? That's where Renfro has failed, because of the post-charge conduct. After the charges were brought forward, forget all the stuff that happened before, if you can, especially with a DUI, that could have been catastrophic. But forget all that. You know, that's an alcoholic doing what alcoholics do. Okay? It's terrible? Yes. Is it forgivable? Absolutely. Do we defend those people? 100%. Vigorously, we defend those individuals. What has his post-charge conduct been? He's been untruthful to this day. That's the issue. And that's what should get him removed, because you're dealing with a narcissist who never is wrong. He's always right. He's never done anything wrong. When you look at his rebuttal, even when they find him guilty as hell, even the police, he said they were wrong. I wasn't drunk. When you look at his rebuttal, he said that they were wrong there. I just took the charge because my attorney told me to, but I wasn't intoxicated. It's the post-charge conduct is what shows that he is not to be kept in that office. I could not take that in front of an arbitrator. I couldn't put him on the stand in front of an arbitrator because he's never wrong, right? And so that has made him a zero, a dud, because of his post-charge conduct. To this day, he has not told Mr. Henry he is sorry, and he has not apologized for that. And he is still defiant. And that's who y'all have as a president. You have y'all ever heard the fish, the remorse? Y'all ever heard of that? I think I'm saying that right. Remorse. Y'all ever heard of those? Those are the sucker fish that get on the bottom of sharks. You see them? They suck up to sharks and they just swim around with them. You have those at National. They're remoras up there. They just suck on National. You'll see them come to their defense all the time on social media. Anything that bad says, you'll have these remoras come in there sucking on the NALC because they have to stay there to survive. They can't go back to carrying mail. You have those, right? Who else would be a zero, a dud? I would have to say, Steve Lassen from Region 8 would have to be a dud. Why? Because you have all these other business agents saying he was intoxicated. We were deeply concerned. Our members were deeply concerned. When they talked to Lassen about the regional training, when they couldn't find Renfro, and he was obviously drunk. We were all there when he came in. He was obviously drunk. He was obviously intoxicated. He made no sense. And everybody in there was looking around like, this motherfucker here is drunk. And what did Lassen say? He wasn't crisp. He was grumpy. That's a remora. That's sucking on the NALC because you have to have that position. And he wanted to come to his friend's aid, and which is admirable, but you're here for the members, right? That's the NALC. It should be. And so when you say that a guy that's up there drunk in front of your constituents, in front of the carriers, he can barely speak, he wasn't crisp. No, he wasn't crisp because his ass was sloshed. That's why he was grumpy. Well, he's grumpy because he's drunk. But you have those remoras that will suck on the NALC, the establishment. And that's where we are in trouble. Is because you will see them come to his aid in these charges, those remoras, those that suck on Renfro's ass. And Lassen is one of those. And you saw that in the report. But so that's when you look at studs and you look at duds, y'all may have different ones. Maybe I'll put a poll up and see who y'all think is a stud and a dud. Or Hero and Zero. But a lot of names in there, a lot of people affected by the charges. I'm going to read the other charges here today. And people are upset about the charges being read. Your anger is misguided. Your anger is misguided. I didn't charge him with anything. I didn't find him guilty of anything. I'm reading the charge. The charges and the findings of the charge, which is our right as carriers to have that. The charges, we were the first ones to read it on here. People got upset about that. Don't care. The Weir report, people are highly upset about that. Don't care. I'm a city letter carrier. I'll be going in tomorrow to deliver mail, right? And so I pay dues every month. And so these charges and this Weir report, they're mine. I said that yesterday. They're mine. And so I'm going to get them. And I have a podcast, so I'm going to read them. And speaking of podcast, y'all pay attention to Classes of Mail. That's a great podcast if y'all are looking for one. Let me get this out of the way because I forgot it the last 2 weeks. Classes of Mail, very good podcast, okay? They do a great job on that. If you're looking for another one, Classes of Mail, get on there. You got Fed Up with Ron Speakman, very good one. More and more need to come out. We don't need to be the only ones. There's a lot of people that can educate. Discord and Reddit, before I forget, I keep forgetting, Discord and Reddit, get on there. Get on from aidarbitration.com. And it'll prompt you to those, okay? Get on there. Great things happening on Discord and Reddit. So get on there. But just remember that. Classes of Mail, another great podcast, doing some great education, okay? I didn't want to forget that because I've seen some good stuff on social media about that. And so I'm always going to try to pump anybody that's trying to educate because I love that. That's what it's all about. I kind of get away from that a little bit because it does no good to do all this education and train y'all and get y'all to ready to do grievances if our union is failing us. We've got to get that corrected first. We've got to get the union corrected first about the B teams, where Barner has completely shit the nest on that, where he has caved in to labor. That will be his undoing, right? That will be his undoing and the way he treats his employees. You don't treat people like that. And that will be his undoing. As great as he was during these charges, he's completely shit the nest as far as the DRT, how he's doing, caving into management, and how he treats his employees. You can't be like that. You can't run your office like that. And so, but anyway, you have a lot of these charges, and I want you to pay attention to the ones dealing with Mr. Henry. I talk about those all the time. Those, a lot of these are terrible, but to me personally, the one against Henry is the worst. And people, disagree with me on certain things as far as these charges. These are worse. These are worse. But here you tried to ruin a man's livelihood. The problem with that is that you see in the charges prior that Rolando was talking about dozens of instances of inappropriate conduct towards women from Renfro, even going after other men's wives. And so he's lucky that he has all of his original teeth in his head when you're going after that. The man's lucky he's carrying all of his regular teeth because that's a no-no. But it's ironic that with his history of being a womanizer, making women uncomfortable, even to the point of them telling Rolando he doesn't need to travel with me anymore because he makes me so uncomfortable. All of these things about womanizing, and what does he do? He makes up stories about Mr. Henry, the very things that he was doing. The very things that Renfro was doing, he makes up lies on Mr. Henry about it. I don't know whether he was trying to deflect all of that onto someone else and just pick Mr. Henry. I don't know why. I don't know what's up. But I'm going to read this charge, and then I'm going to read you some emails where Mr. Henry is begging him to talk to him to clear his name. He's begging him, and I'll read that to you. But I'm going to go ahead and read these charges. It's not going to be a very long episode, okay? But we'll talk later about who y'all think are the heroes and the zeros, all right? And I just give y'all a little glimpse of who I thought was. So here we go. Charge 2B, circulating false or misleading statements about an NELC officer. Brian Renfro shared and referenced confidential information about an employee matter. As noted in the charging document, rumors apparently started to circulate at Region 1's training, which was conducted from March 30th to April 1st, regarding Vice President James Henry having inappropriate contact with female headquarters staff. I asked NBA Keisha if she had heard anything at the training, and she indicated she had not. The alleged allegations and questions originated at the Marietta, Georgia Executive Council meeting in January 23rd through 26. One female staff member casually mentioned to President Brian Renfro an incident that had occurred between her and the vice president. Ultimately, two female staffers said they had experienced issues, though neither of them filed official complaints. The charge referenced several sources having asserted that President Renfro had informed them of alleged complaints prior to the regional training at San Diego, California. My investigation determined that six former and current national officers and one letter carrier staffer were contacted by President Renfro with this information. When I questioned the president about why he did this, he explained that he was just seeking advice from several sources on how to proceed. I questioned each of the individuals that President Renfro had contacted. Each of them agreed that they had been contacted, but each of them also stated that they had not shared the information with anyone else. Nonetheless, the rumors did surface and began to take on a life of their own. There was a significant gap in time between when alleged inappropriate behavior was brought to President Renfro's attention and stories began to circulate at the Region 1 training regarding that behavior. About 2 months. During this time, no appropriate action was taken with human resources to address the issue. The charging officer, Director of City Delivery, Chris Jackson, told me that he was contacted by a former branch president from Region 1 regarding the allegations. By this time, Chris was already aware of them, but he had not told Vice President James Henry about them. He asked the former branch president not to bother VP Henry with this information while he was on vacation. He did anyway. This was sometime at the beginning of April. This accounts for the gap in time between when the vice president learned of the alleged allegations being made public and his request to speak to President Renfro about them. The email thread between President Renfro and Vice President Henry, which occurred between April 10th, 11th, and 12th, is part of the documentation associated with this charge. It is quite clear from the language and tone of the vice president's emails that he was very upset and wanted to address this matter as soon as possible. President Renfro indicated that he was in meetings all afternoon on the 10th and had to leave early on the 11th due to a migraine, so he was unable to meet. He offered a meeting after the resident officer's meeting on the 12th, but VP Henry had a very important doctor's appointment at that time. However, since the resident officer's meeting usually occurred in the afternoon, the vice president offered to meet in the morning if that was not possible. He would make a special trip back to the building later that afternoon to meet. Ultimately, the meeting did not occur, and VP Henry then approached EVP Paul Barner to address his concerns. Paul immediately turned the matter over to Director of Human Resources, Ken Raker. Ken expeditiously conducted an investigation, interviewing everyone involved within 3 to 4 days of being notified of the issue. On April 18th, EVP Barner announced the results of said investigation at the same executive council meeting when he announced that President Brian Renfro was taking a leave of absence. He said human resources had determined that the facts did not exactly support the allegations. Based on my investigation of this charge, it became clear to me that this matter had been handled improperly, to the detriment of all the concerned parties. I spoke with Human Resources Manager Ken Raker to determine if there was a policy in place for reporting allegations of inappropriate behavior and if the procedures contained therein had been followed properly. He indicated that there was a policy and it had not been followed in this case. It is found on everyone's day force and is attached to the training module, which is rolled out every 2 to 3 years. All employees and officers are required to read it and sign off that they had done so. The policy was recently updated in January of 2021. President Renfro was certainly aware of the policy and its guidelines for what must be done when someone reported an allegation. He was involved in the update of the policy and had an additional role to play in the application of the policy. HR Director Ken Raker provided me with a copy of NELC's policy prohibiting workplace harassment and discrimination and sexual harassment complaint form. I've included a copy with this report. See attachment. I've also included emails from April of 2021 which confirm EVP Brian Renfro's receipt of the policy and procedures and his position as the one to whom the individual reporting the alleged misconduct can appeal a resolution they did not agree with. See attachment. Policy item 7 is relevant to the issue at hand. It reads in part, all supervisors and managers who receive a complaint or information about suspected harassment or discrimination observe what may be harassing or discriminatory behavior for any reason suspect that sexual harassment is occurring are required to report such conduct to Ken Raker, Naheed Safiri, and Jenny Green. I have also included an email between Paul Barner and Brian Renfro dated April 16th of 2021, which confirms Brian's receipt of the policy and the procedures. These procedures were put in place to protect the privacy of both the accusers and the accused. Had this policy been followed, we would not be here addressing this charge today. Given the fact that the accused in this matter has now retained an attorney, the charging officer's concern that the union may be exposed to possible litigation and liability has an increased level of validity. Additionally, in President Renfro's rebuttal to this charge, he indicated that over the course of several weeks, now months in 2023, multiple headquarters staff members communicated concerns and allegations to me regarding what they perceived as inappropriate behavior by VP Henry, page 9 of President Renfro's rebuttal to the charges. I spoke with HR Director Ken Raker regarding this issue. He indicated that he and his staff had never been notified of any additional allegations. There are two other issues related to this charge that I believe are important to address. First of all, it has come to my attention that due to how this particular situation was handled and the resulting fallout publicity for the parties involved, there are women who are saying they will not report any type of inappropriate behavior or harassment they may have encountered in the future. This would result in a hostile workplace environment. Secondly, there were two different ways that the issue in this case was characterized. One, that inappropriate touching was involved, and two, that a more aggressive physical interaction was involved. To be clear, neither of these two options is acceptable, but the latter one strikes people as being more egregious. The latter one was the one taken to Human Resources for review. I located 7 people whom President Renfro had contacted about the allegations. 5 said he characterized the issue the first way. 2 said he characterized it the second way. In his rebuttal to this charge, President Renfro said, "The idea that I would make this up and spread it is ridiculous. On the contrary, I wanted to handle this appropriately and as quietly as possible to respect the privacy of everyone involved." Page 9 of President Renfro's rebuttal to the charges. Again, had President Renfro immediately contacted Human Resources as required in the NELC policy, he would have handled it appropriately, quietly, and respectfully for everyone involved. He chose not to do so. Instead, President Renfro initiated discussions with 7 people, purportedly for advice as to how the matter should be handled, rather than go through the proper channels of which he was fully aware. By doing this, he left the door open for confidential employee matters to potentially spread throughout the membership. Had President Renfro abided by the policy, we may have gotten the same results in terms of Human Resources' assessment of the complaint. The differences in this privacy of both the accusers and the accused would have been preserved, and trust in the system would not have been so utterly compromised. And so here's the emails, and I'll read them because they're in there. It says, "Brian, I came to your office today at approximately 1:30 p.m. to meet with you, but you were not here. However, I'm requesting a meeting with you ASAP regarding very concerning allegations that I have received from the field regarding my conduct. If you are available today, please let me know, and I will come up to your office and would like to have a Mac Julian present. If you're not available today, please advise as to when you are available to meet as expeditiously as possible. Your prompt response and attention to this matter is greatly appreciated. Thank you, James Henry." Brian Renfro responds, "I was in meetings all afternoon. I'll let you know a good time tomorrow." James Henry, thank you. Immensely appreciated. I'll stand by to hear back from you. Have a fantastic rest of the day. Brian, here's Henry. I hadn't received a response from you regarding my request a meeting to occur today. However, you indicated in your previous email that we can meet today after the officer's meeting. I'll be at the doctor's office at the time and am departing today at 11:30 a.m. However, as I stated in my response to you on yesterday, the issue at hand is ultra important and of the utmost urgency. Therefore, I'm willing to return after my doctor appointment today to meet with you. I anticipate that it would be approximately 4:30 to 5 p.m. Please advise if the aforementioned can and will be accommodated. I'm not comfortable with allowing the concerns I have to discuss with you to go unaddressed past today. It is in regards to allegations of my conduct, and I view it as having an adverse impact on my reputation and career. Please advise. James Henry. James, unfortunately, I have a migraine, so I'm going home shortly. Let's talk after the residence meeting tomorrow. My apologies. Brian Renfro. Brian, I'm disappointed that we will not be able to meet today as anticipated. I truly hope that you begin to feel better and have a speedy recovery. I have a doctor's appointment with a specialist tomorrow, April 2023, in Bowling, Maryland, at 1 p.m. that I've been waiting for almost 4 months. I'll be here tomorrow morning until 11:30 a.m. I must express the utmost urgency in meeting with you since you are the president, as my reputation and livelihood is under attack. Is it possible we can meet in the morning? I don't care what time. If you say 5 a.m., I'm good because that's important to me, and the matter needs to be addressed sooner, right now, and faster than immediately. Please advise, James Henry. And that's it. And he never met with James Henry about his concerns. Now, here's a guy that you can tell is deeply distressed about rumors that Mr. Renfro has started about him, and he's wanting to clear his name, and this guy's got a migraine and can't meet, and he's got all these other issues. To me, that's the worst, because first off, look at what you did to this man. He's begging to meet with you to clear his name. Going to bring Mac Julian with him. You won't meet. To this day, he's not met with him to talk about it. To this day, today, he's not met with him to talk to him or apologize for what he's done. That, to me, is worthy of your removal. That, to me, James Henry is a great man. If you know him, you know what I'm talking about. The things that he's done for the city letter carriers. To me, that one should get it done. But you got these remoras, these suckers that don't give a shit about James Henry, don't give a shit about the city letter carriers. All they care about is sucking on Renfro's ass and preserving their position. Their positions are going to be terminated in 2 years. I promise you that. Their positions will be terminated in 2 years. And they can suck on somebody else somewhere else outside of the NELC. They will be done. But I feel for that man. I do. Like I said, it could have ruined his livelihood and his relationships and his marriage. And this motherfucker could care less. He's just out there telling everybody. Just making shit up. And it's unbelievable. Now, here's two that were brought forward and the executive council did not vote were serious, okay? And I'll read these. Charge 6, conduct shameful and inexcusable. This charge involves President Renfro clicking like on a social media post which included a reference to the Ku Klux Klan. President Renfro provided me with a more legible image of this post. He explained that it was generated because of trash talk about a super regional round of the NCAA baseball tournament, which pitted the University of Tennessee against the University of Southern Miss on June 10th through 12th. Tennessee was upset that the game was going to be played at Southern Mississippi, so a Tennessee fan with a Twitter profile of RKD2 posted, "I know it must be tough to get a decent job in Mississippi, the Klan and bad drinking water and all." Brian's friend, whose Twitter profile is the Rally Bike, posted that the KKK was actually founded in Tennessee. President Renfro said he liked the tweet because the irony in pointing out the idiocy of this Tennessee fan. I provided this explanation to director of City Delivery, Chris Jackson. Chris became very emotional as he spoke about the KKK and his personal recollections of it and the history relayed to him by his parents. They grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, which is about 13 miles from the border with Mississippi. They told him about the blacks hanging from trees and lampposts just across the state line of Mississippi for everyone to see. Sometimes there would just be shoes hanging there with signs saying this person who owned them had been hanged. His father told him how he had to flee Memphis when white residents there told him if he didn't, he would be hanged. That's how the family ended up in California, where Chris and his brother were born. These images and this history are very powerful. To see the national president involved in liking anything associated with the Ku Klux Klan was a shock and impacted him on a deeply emotional level. Just talking to me about it, he was filled with a feeling of abhorrence that was so raw he had to leave the room to compose himself. I confess I was deeply moved by his pain and the history that was passed down to him by his parents. The more I thought about it, the more I recognized that this charge has merit. I reread President Renfro's rebuttal of this particular charge. On page 18, he stated, "This charge demonstrates a total absence of knowledge or understanding of social media. I wonder how many of our members know little or nothing about Twitter. Even those members who use Twitter may not understand the nuance of this interaction as explained by President Renfro. How many members from very different backgrounds who might be exposed to this Twitter thread in some way would be equally shocked to find their national president liking a post mentioning the Ku Klux Klan? We simply don't know how many others might be engaged in what he described as an absurd reading of social media from a place of complete ignorance. A leader must be aware of the impact that his actions may have on all the members, and in this case, on those members whose heritage is different from his own. Too many white supremacist groups and other racist individuals are now promoting the same kind of hate and calling for the same kind of violence that the Klan has advocated since its inception. Many of our members have oral and written histories handed down from parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents who experienced these atrocities firsthand. And many of those members are experiencing the same kind of bigotry and injustice in their own lives today. A leader must be conscious, mindful, and respectful of how their actions can impact all their members, as well as what actions could be misconstrued, especially with a membership as diverse as our own, and act accordingly. Finally, regardless of what President Renfro or anyone else thinks of this particular charge, each charge must be weighed and decided on its own merits. See attachments. I've included copies of the Twitter exchange associated with this charge. One is the original screenshot, and the other is an enhanced version provided by President Renfro. And then here's the last one. Charge 4, behavior to female member unbecoming of our national president. On March 14th, President Renfro and Chief of Staff Keller traveled to Biloxi, Mississippi for Region 8's wrap session. President Renfro was scheduled to speak the next day. Later that evening, Brian decided to go to the bar at the Golden Nugget Casino, where the wrap session was being held. Corey Blaylock Keller did not go to the bar, and Brent Jarestad, who was also there for a legislative presentation, went to the bar for a short period of time. Actually, there were a number of bars in the casino. The one where NALC members was gathering was not on the casino floor, so it was a little more private. President Renfro was from Region 8. He knew a number of the people in the bar. Brian Buttrey saw President Renfro enter the bar and mingle around with different people. As a member of Region 8, Buttrey had seen Brian before, but had never spoken with him. He had the opportunity to do so with a group of people. His impression was that he seemed nice. Everyone was drinking and having a good time. It was Tuesday night, and the bar was not very loud. The time was somewhere between 11:30 p.m. and midnight. Susie Miller is the president of Branch 6194 in Moulton, Alabama. It is a small branch with only 4 members. She had never met President Renfro before he approached her in that bar. She was speaking with Hanny Safey, the secretary-treasurer of Branch 1314, Decatur, Alabama. Susie's son is a member of that branch. She had her hand on Haney's shoulder and was talking him up as excellent representation of letter carriers. Susie stated that Brian removed her hand from his shoulder, told her he did not care about him, and wanted to talk to her. Haney confirmed her version of the events. And let me say that again. When you talk about womanizing, when you talk about Rolando not telling everybody what was going on with this guy being a womanizer, let me read that again. She had never met President Brian Renfro before he approached her in that bar. She was speaking with Haney Safey, the Secretary Treasurer of Branch 1314, Decatur, Alabama. Susie's son is a member of that branch. She had her hand on Haney's shoulder and was talking him up as an excellent representative of letter carriers. Susie stated that Brian removed her hand from his shoulder and told her he did not care about him and wanted to talk to her. Haney confirmed her version of events. Brian Kenyatta, a new steward from Branch 1314, was a witness to Brian's disrespectful treatment of Haney. President Renfro then led Susie over to a table and sat down on a couch across from her. She said he was arrogant and aggressive toward her. Brian Kenyatta, a new steward from Branch 1314, who was standing near Haney, described Brian's behavior in a similar fashion. He also noted that Susie seemed upset. He did not think it was appropriate for a national president to be behaving in that manner. President Renfro's description of this conversation with Susie does not exactly match up with Susie's. They both agreed that he was being very aggressive toward her. Her statement regarding the incident, which is included in the file, and her statement to me differ from his terms of what was said and how it was said. He said they had a normal conversation until she began a baseless attack on the NELC as a union. He said she works in a one-person office, so he recommended that she merge with Decatur, Alabama. President Renfro further noted that he could not figure out why she was even at a training from a branch with no money and holding such disdain for the union. He claimed she told him it was based on what she perceives as a lack of representation for a family member in an EEO proceeding. His statement continues with, "She then told me her only loyalty was to Corey Walton." All these statements are from page 16 of President Brian Renfro's rebuttal to the charges. After telling him what branch she was from, she asserts, "I declined the merger and explained my reasons." Renfro then proceeded to pressure me and told me I wasn't being loyal to NELC. I explained I was very loyal to the NELC. Even after they had failed to properly represent my son that was in the branch he was expecting me to merge into, I explained how I had reached out to Corey Walton when I was helping my son with his EEO after the union said he had no grievance and due to the help we received. Was loyal to Corey because he was so helpful. See attachment excerpt from Susie Miller's statement. Susie met Corey 4 to 5 years ago. He had helped her before with grievance issues, not just with the EEO. It was at that point Susie said that President Renfro said to her, "So you're Corey's bitch now." Susie became very uncomfortable with the aggression in his voice. She thought that the phrase was used because he might have been agitated about her bragging on Corey. Neither Haney nor Brian heard the conversation between Susie and President Renfro. They both heard and saw Brian Buttrey suddenly yelling, cursing, pointing his finger at President Renfro and saying he was going to whip his ass. Brian said Brian was standing not too far away from President Renfro and Susie. He was visibly upset. A physical confrontation was avoided when people came over to check on Mr. Buttrey. Corey Walton stepped in front of him, moved him back, and tried to calm him down. Brian told him he was getting madder by the minute. NBA Steve Lassen came over to them to see what was wrong. Corey said he was going to take Brian Buttrey upstairs to his room. Contrary to President Renfro's assumption regarding Susie and Corey, Corey Walton and Brian Buttrey had traveled together to the rap session and were sharing a room. Since Buttrey is a retiree with time on his hands, he and Corey would sometimes travel together to trainings and arbitrations where Brian would TA for him. When they reached the room, Brian told Corey what he had heard President Renfro say to Susie. Soon after, Susie came up to make sure Brian was all right. Susie and Brian Buttrey met a few years ago and became friends when one of her sons was murdered. He traveled to the funeral. They both came across as credible witnesses. There are different accounts about how far away Brian Buttrey was from Susie and President Renfro and who intervened to get him under control. Mr. Buttrey says he was 5 feet away. Corey Walton agrees with that statement. Brian Kenyatta also said he was fairly close. Others, including NBA Steve Lassen, say that he was closer to 15 or 20 feet away. In any case, it appears clear that Brian Butcher is close enough to hear what President Renfro said to Susie. It seems highly unlikely that he would suddenly start pointing at President Renfro and screaming about he was going to whip his ass for what he said to Susie without that kind of provocation. Do you see what I say about a remora? Here's three people saying that Butcher was in 5 feet, and Steve Lassen says he's more about, 15 to 20. That's a remora. Susie did not attend the morning session on March 15th. She said she felt uncomfortable with President Renfro and still kind of in shock about the bitch reference. I asked her how her branch could afford to send her to the rap session, and she indicated that she paid her own way because she wanted to learn as much as she could to better represent the members in her branch. I also asked her if she felt disdain for the union. She responded that she did not feel that way. She had been upset about her son's situation and was simply trying to help him by enlisting Corey's assistance with that issue. She is actually good friends with the branch officers in Decatur, Alabama, particularly with incoming President Diana Hughes. They shared a room at the Golden Nugget. As noted previously, her son is a member of the Branch 1314. She simply prefers to be part of her smaller branch, and the officers of Branch 1314 are respectful of her decision. I have enclosed Susie Miller's statement and Brian Buttrey's statement regarding the events of March 14th at the bar. And so the executive council said that wasn't serious, right? That you can call a female member a bitch, you can be aggressive towards her, and they felt that that wasn't serious. So that's the reason I call them bitches right there, because if that's not serious, that you're going to call a female a bitch and be aggressive towards her, take a gentleman's hand off of her shoulder, said he don't care about her, I need to talk to you. That kind of aggression is not serious enough for the president of this union to act like. That's the reason I call them out of their name bitches and all that. And I'll continue to do that because that's just how I am. If y'all don't think that's serious, something's wrong with y'all. Whoever voted against that, and I can tell you one right now, is Lassen, because he's sitting there lying his ass off since you're 15 feet away. He's a remora. And so, they're enablers. And that's what we've got to get rid of, these enablers that enable this type of shit. To call a young lady a bitch because you're upset with her. And I know what it was. It was because she was saying my name and they don't like me. And that's the reason they voted this one down. I'm sure of it. It's because I was involved with and they don't like me because I'm going after the establishment. I'm going after them. And I will continue to do that. I will continue to go after those sorry, low-down son of a bitches who are the establishment. You got a lot of them up there that want to change, that won't change, that want to get back to representing city letter carriers like they used to. You got those enablers, these business agents, most of them, that are pieces of shit that need to be gone so that we can get back to doing what we're supposed to do, representing city letter carriers. We've gotten so far away from that with this new regime, man. We are in trouble, and you see why. Those are the charges brought forward, the findings brought forward by Mr. Weir, okay? So there you have it. As members, it's your right to hear that and to see that. Remember that. Anybody who's getting upset at that, a remora, okay? Anybody on social media that's getting upset at that, remoras, suck asses, sucking Renfro's ass. I will not be that. I will not be that. I'm going after the establishment. Now, it's personal, right? Because first off, you hurt a friend of mine. And secondly, I'm for the city letter carrier first and only. And that's how I'll be. We're going to educate like never before this year. We're going to have some major education. JB's going to come and do one of the greatest one-hour office episodes, one-hour office time episodes that you'll have. Now, he's going to do that soon, and that's going to help us out. But we have problems. We have problems with this union right now and the lack of representation and the lack of care. They just don't give a shit. When I become business agent, that will not be that way. Anybody that calls me, I'm going to make sure that I care for them and take care of them. You will not have to wonder where I'm at. That's a promise. And we're going to make changes in 2 years. It's inevitable. there's nothing they can do, right? There's nothing they can do to stop what's coming. The ticket is going to be ridiculous, I promise you. So there's nothing they can do to stop what's coming. You know, I'm already picking out furniture because it's happening. So, all right, a little bit shorter episode for you today. Remember, Sunday, no episode. All right, it's Easter. Y'all enjoy your Easter weekend, those of you who celebrate that. All right. The next Sunday, very special guest wants to talk to y'all. And then I'll be doing publication 552. All right. And that's going to happen then. One of the things that JB, I forgot to mention this. One of the things that JB's going to talk about on the hour office time, and I was just reading through some stuff to make sure I didn't miss anything, is he's going to show you how to find the falsification of the hour office time the clock rings. He's going to go over that at length with you and show you how to find that, because I had a lot of people saying, hey, when you talk about falsification of clock rings to show an hour, what are you looking for? That's very difficult for me to just tell you. So he's going to have a very in-depth thing for you about the falsification of the clock rings, where management is falsifying clock rings to show an hour office time when actually you're in the office longer. Okay, so he's going to cover that. So that's one of the things I just saw. So coming back to you. But anyway, y'all have a fantastic rest of the week. There's your Weir Report, episode 2. All right, so it is what it is. We'll talk about it later, all right? So y'all have a fantastic rest of the week, a fantastic Easter for those of y'all who celebrate, and I will talk to y'all on the next Sunday. I'm going to have a very special guest for you, all right? I love each and every one of you. Remember that. Remember that. I do this for y'all, not me. I get nothing from it. You know, I pay for it out of my pocket. It's because I love you, and I want y'all to be protected. I want y'all to be warriors. And that's all. That's it. And I want you to be able to protect your people. That's the reason we do this. And that's the reason we'll continue to do it. It's growing by leaps and bounds. More and more people every day are getting a hold of Vermaid Arbitration and listening to it. That's great. By the time this election comes around, we will be overwhelming. It will be overwhelming. And there's nothing they can do to stop it. And y'all are going to turn the tide on this election. I promise you that. You will turn the tide on this election. It will be unlike anything they've ever seen in the NLC, the amount of votes that come in on this election. And it's going to be you that does it, all right? And we'll make sure of it. We'll make sure of it. All right, that's enough. I'll talk to y'all next Sunday. I love each and every one of you, all right? Bye.